I'd like to call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order at 1:52. We were on the floor longer than anticipated. Today is Monday, March 19, 2018. Members present are Representative Parrish, Representative Tallarico, Representative Rauscher, Representative Drummond, Co-Chair Tarr, and myself, Co-Chair Josephson. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Assisting us today is our Recording Secretary, Debbie Tillinghast, and our LIO moderator, Eileen Keim. I'd like to remind members to please silence their cell phones. This afternoon, we will hear, we're going to start by hearing two nominees that somehow were forwarded after other nominees, but we have them nonetheless. We're going to start with Lawrence Van Dale. He is a sitting member of the Board of Game. I'm told that he has to be somewhere shortly, and so my hope is that Mr. Van Dale is online now. Mr. Van Dale.
Yes, sir. I am here. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Sure.
So members have and hopefully received in a relatively timely way Mr. Van Dale's CV and application. And at this time, by the way, we've been joined by Representative Birch. At this time, are there questions for Mr. Van Dale? Mr. Van Dale, maybe you could, just as a warm-up exercise, we're also joined by Representative Lincoln, remind us why you're up for confirmation again so fast. Were you appointed to a seat that was vacant?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I was appointed to a seat that was vacated by Kip Fanning. He had served for 2 years and stepped down for personal reasons, and Governor Walker put me into that position last year about this time. So I filled out the last year of his 3-year term, and now the governor has reappointed me for a full 3-year term.
Okay. And, sir, my memory of you is that you're from Kodiak and an expert on brown bears. Do I have that right?
The first part of your statement is true. I am from Kodiak. The second part, there's no such thing as an expert on brown bears, but I have spent my 34-year career in fish and game working with them.
And is that because they are unpredictable?
No, it's just because they think differently than we do.
Okay.
So, just like, I guess you could say people and dogs are unpredictable, but yeah.
Okay. So, members, is there questions for Mr. Van Dale? Okay. Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Van Dale, thanks for being here with us today. I had seen in your resume that you've done some work with habitat evaluation, and I was just wondering if you could tell us how broad spread that was through the state during your career. Was it kind of focused in one area, or was it spread around?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Tallarico, I've worked primarily in the southern part of the state and ancillarily with habitat. I haven't done specific habitat type of work like with Habitat Division and what they do. Most of my habitat work has been directly with regard to moose management when I was out in Dillingham looking at what areas could support moose and caribou, also as the caribou herd was rising at the time I was out there in Dillingham. So I would say the vast majority of my work in that arena has been in the southern part of the state, south and west Alaska.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Van Dale, this is Co-Chair Josephson again. Tell us, if you will, what your experience has been like in the first year serving on the board and what your impression is of that experience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Co-Chair, it's been awesome. It's been a very amazing opportunity to, and an honor to serve on the Board of Game. I'm very amazed at the process that we have, the ability for people to be heard through the advisory committees, through the board process, and through coming to each individual board member with their ideas. It also impresses me of how much passion there is for our wildlife resources in this state. And, of course, anytime you have passion for something, you have a lot of varying opinions. And that's been the challenge, is trying to balance all of those thoughts, desires, both spiritual and traditional and practical for our wildlife in a way that's fair to everybody and follows the Constitution. So I've been very impressed. I wasn't new to the board process because I say I've worked with Fish and Game for 34 years on the other side of the table. So I kind of like went from being a lawyer to being a judge. And it's a different kind of experience being on that side. But it's fun. I honestly enjoy it, even though it's a lot of hard work.
Any other questions for Mr. Vandale? Mr. Vandale, you get off easily here this afternoon, and so we thank you, and we look forward to hearing the arguments, which I think are going to be favorable for your reconfirmation next month.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I am always available if you have any other thoughts or concerns. And for you personally, I know that you sponsor a lot of wildlife-related bills, and I'd like to offer my ear if you want to discuss any of them with me, either during sessions or after sessions, because I really appreciate hearing your ideas on things and sharing mine with you. So thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Vandale, just a word, that your comment means a lot to me, and since you've offered, I will accept it. I will contact you.
Thank you very much. I can send you my contact information.
Actually, we have a question, if you will, from Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Chairman Justin. I just would like to offer the chance to talk with him myself,
sure,
if I could. Thank you very much.
I bet he'll take you up on it.
Later on.
You betcha. Be glad to do it, sir, through the chair.
Okay. Since we're in this rhythm, we're going to stay on confirmations, and we're now going to ask Mr. Bunch. Mr. Bunch, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I'm here.
Would you give us your name and... you can testify and give us your introductory comments.
Sure. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and our co-chair and members of the committee. Thank you for your time. For the record, my name is Jason Bunch. I'm seeking confirmation to the Guide Outfitter seat of the Big Game Commercial Services Board. A little bit about myself. The Coast Guard brought my wife and I to Alaska in 1997. I served Alaska as a helicopter rescue swimmer for 13 years. We have two boys who are both born in Kodiak. I operate a small guide business on Kodiak, and I also guide for other guide outfitters when needed. I hold both a federal and state land use permit, and my wife and I also own an asphalt maintenance business that we operate seasonally. So that's a little bit about myself.
Okay. Are there questions for Mr. Bunch? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As the owner guide of Kodiak Backcountry Adventures, and as a guide for a bear camp, and as the owner operator of K Line Alaska, what is K Line Alaska, by the by?
Through the chair, we're a committee member. K Line Alaska is an asphalt maintenance business.
Oh.
We do small asphalt work, potholes and driveways, maybe some small parking lots. We put the parking lot lines in. Everybody wonders how that happens. It doesn't happen on its own. And we do seal coating and kind of preservation of asphalt surfaces also.
Follow up, Representative Parrish.
Well, first, good on you. That is not easy work. In your job as a guide, do you anticipate, if you're confirmed, do you anticipate ever being called upon to make choices which could have a financial impact on either of your businesses?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish. In the application process, I can't quite remember because it was a few months ago, but there's a section in there that asks about if I felt that I would be in conflict being a guide and being on a guide licensing board. And so I didn't really know how to answer that at first, so I did a little bit of research. And I read most of the Ethics Act, which is quite extensive. And in the process of doing that, the scope of the Ethics Act section, it says that minor and inconsequential conflicts of interest are unavoidable. And so that gave me a little bit of pause. So then looking ahead, it talks about the misuse of official positions. And then there's quite a long list of do's and don'ts, mostly don'ts, listed in that section of the Ethics Act. And after reviewing that, I felt very confident that I wasn't going to allow myself to be put in a position that would challenge my integrity. And then finally, I came across the disclosure procedures section. And I felt like that really sums the whole Ethics Act up. That safeguards my integrity. And so to answer your question, with all of that information, no, I don't think that I will have a hard time making decisions that could potentially have an effect on my own business. There are many steps and procedures to bring that forth, to put that on the table, and to utilize the board, the chair of the board especially, to kind of check and balance my integrity.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, follow up, President Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Brunch, for your considerable study of the topic. This is a question that I've raised before, and just reading it narrowly, mind, I don't mean to cast any aspersions upon your character. I think you've done a good job of laying out the circumstances, alluding to the circumstances in which you would recuse yourself to avoid taking a vote where you had a conflict. But the question, narrowly read, is it possible that you or any member of your family will benefit financially by decisions to be made by the board or commission for which you are applying? Now, as a guide outfitter, and for a guide outfitter seat, it's anticipated that there would be some conflicts because this is the industry in which you work. The potential existence of such conflicts isn't a barrier condition, because of course there will be occasions in which the board is required to make determinations that affect guides or outfitters. However, I would appreciate it a narrow answer to the question: is it possible that you or any member of your family will benefit financially by decisions to be made by the board or commission for which you are applying?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish. I wish I had the statutes and regulations in front of me, and I would look at what the board is authorized to do and what the board's purpose is. And off the top of my head, if I strummed through those, the board is responsible for licensing, of which I'm licensed. So any licensing issues that the board comes up against, I would say that I wouldn't have a conflict with that, and I can't imagine a position where I would be in, I would gain monetarily from a licensing regulation or decision made of the board. Looking down the list, of the purpose of the board to establish regulation, I would say yes. A guide outfitter who is on the Big Game Commercial Services Board could inconsequentially gain monetarily, perhaps, not directly, but definitely indirectly, through a decision made by the board. And if that was the case, then, of course, through the disclosure procedures, you would make that known. So I hope that answers your question. Yes, potentially, indirectly, and inconsequentially, you could, but I cannot think of a, and you know what, maybe if I had a training program and I was getting paid to train young guides, and my business was training young guides, then perhaps directly I could make a decision on the board, Big Game Commercial Services Board, through a regulation that affected training. Yes, then that's about the only thing I could think of that would involve a yes to your answer.
Thank you, Mr. Kind
of, it's kind of a loaded question, sir. So it's as tough to question as it is to answer.
Mr. Bunch, this is Co-Chairman Josephson, and I just wanted to thank you for your answer. With respect for my colleague, Representative Parrish, there's a divided opinion of sorts on the committee about the technicality of the question and whether it's well-framed. And frankly, I'm impressed that you've done some homework on this, as Representative Parrish noted, and that you understand the nuances of it. And so I don't want you to think that you're facing an inquisition. We're actually very pleased that you have applied for the seat.
Well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I appreciate that. And it does actually feel like an inquisition.
Well, I'm sorry that it feels that way. I suspect since 1959 that you're in good company with lots of folks that I will never meet who feel that way. Representative Pellerin.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, I guess not really a question, I wanted to point out that Mr. Bunch was awarded the EMT of the Year by the state of Alaska for heroic efforts. I think that's certainly worth recognizing, and I think we should thank him for his service. So thank you very much for what you've done in the past, Mr. Bunch. It's very impressive.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Thanks for that note, Representative Tellery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And any other questions for Mr. Bunch? Seeing none, I'm going to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the committee room that wants to speak to the nominations of Mr. Bunch or Mr. Van Dale? Seeing none, I'm going to the line, and I see that it appears there are two gentlemen. I'll start with Mark Richards. Mr. Richards, are you there?
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Josephson and Tarr and members of the committee. My name is Mark Richards. I'm the Executive Director of Resident Hunters of Alaska, and I'll be speaking for our over 1,400 members today in support of Dr. Van Dale's reappointment to the Board of Game. We supported Larry last year, and I've been at all the Board of Game meetings since that time. Nothing I've seen or heard from Larry causes us to change our opinion that he is a great addition to the board. His career at Fish and Game and as a regional supervisor of Region 2 is well known. As he mentioned, he's seen things from both sides of the table. I also wanted to mention that Mr. Van Dale serves as the Board of Game member on the Big Game Commercial Services Board, and I'll see him there tomorrow at their meeting. He's an extremely valuable asset to that board as well. We fully support Dr. Van Dale's reappointment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Richards? Seeing none, we'll go to Wayne Kubat, Vice President, Alaska Professional Hunters Association. Mr. Kubat.
Yes. Yeah, I'm Wayne Kubat. I'm Vice President of Alaska Professional Hunters Association, APHA for short. I'm representing APHA today in my testimony. APHA supports the confirmation of board member Larry Van Dale. We support him, not because he agrees with us all the time. He doesn't. But because we feel he is knowledgeable, does his homework, puts the conservation of our wildlife resource first, is respectful and willing to listen to viewpoints he doesn't necessarily agree with, and we feel he will work to unite Alaskans instead of divide them. We feel Member Van Dale's long background as a wildlife biologist in Kodiak gives the board much-needed representation, knowledge, and perspective concerning coastal and island areas of Alaska. We feel that he has come up to speed very fast in a short amount of time. APHA looks forward to working with him and supports his confirmation. We also support Jason Bunch to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Jason is a 20-year resident of Alaska, and since he became a registered guide in 2012, he has been an active participant in Board of Game and Big Game Commercial Service Board activities. He's passionate. He shows passion and energy in all that he does. He's a fast learner. He has a lot of business and guiding and Alaskan skills, and we feel he will be a valuable member of the Commercial Services Board.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kubat. Questions for Mr. Kubat? I don't see any. That's all the callers. I'm going to close public testimony at 2:12, and I will now entertain a motion for Madam Co-Chair. Are there any other comments? Okay.
The House Resources Committee has reviewed the qualifications of Mr. Lawrence Vandale, Governor appointee to the Board of Game, and Mr. Jason Bunch, Governor appointee to the Big Game Commercial Services Board, and recommends that the names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against these individuals during any further session for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. We will go into an at ease for purposes of signing the document.
PM. The next item on today's schedule is House Bill 27. We had the first hearing on this on March 9th, and so that day we had quite a number of individuals signed up to testify, and there were some folks we unfortunately didn't have time to hear from. And so this today is going to be the completion of the public testimony, and so that's where we're going to go. We have a couple of people online, just looking at the list here, pardon me. Okay, a couple folks with some time considerations, but there's a couple people that are supposed to be online that I'm not seeing their names, so that's what's throwing me off here. So we're going to start here with, apologies if I mispronounce your name, Anahama Shannon from Coeric.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi there. If you could please state
your name. My name is Anahama Shannon. I'm the director of the environmental program at Coeric. Coeric is a native nonprofit organization in Nome serving the 20 tribes of the Bering Strait region. We're in support of House Bill 27, the Toxic Free Children's Act, and wish to see it passed. Our children should not be exposed to toxics by having them put directly into their bedding, clothing, toys, and household goods. It's heartbreaking to think that we're putting chemicals directly into household products which affect neurological, reproductive, and immune system health. We know that our children are affected at a greater rate because their bodies are smaller, they breathe faster, and they have a greater rate of exposure due to the nature of where and how they play. We know that flame retardants are not effective in preventing fires, but we do know that they are harmful to our children through ingestion and inhalation. In our region, and in many of the rural communities throughout Alaska, many of the Class 3 landfills burn whatever is taken to the dump. Clothes, household goods, toys, which have flame retardants in them, are burned along with residential trash. The toxic smoke that is produced by burning these products in hopes of reducing the mass of trash in our overburdened landfills makes its way into our environment by smoke fallout, by toxic ash that leaches into groundwater or is tracked on the bottom of people's boots when they exit the landfill, and by the polluted air that is produced, which affects everyone exposed to the smoke. Landfills are burned on a daily basis and oftentimes are much less than 2 miles away from the village. We know that cancer-causing dioxins are produced when these products are burned. So let's stop exposing our environment and our people to these detrimental chemicals. Please keep Alaskan children healthier by passing House Bill 27. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Shannon. Are there any questions for the testifier? Okay, we don't have any questions for you this afternoon. Thanks again. Next, we're going to go to Art DeLuane from the Governor's Council on Disabilities. If you could please state your name for the record and your affiliation.
Good afternoon. My name is Art DeLuane, and I'm with the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. I would like to testify on behalf of House Bill 27 from the perspective of brain development. The Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education supports House Bill 27. Our council mission is to advocate for individuals with developmental disabilities and work to ensure that they flourish in as safe environments as possible. We also have the responsibility to advocate for the early intervention systems that allow very young children to develop in natural and stimulating environments. We support HB 27 because we believe this bill would help protect the health and brain development of Alaska's children. It will also benefit families and firefighters by preventing exposure to toxic flame retardant chemicals found in children's products and upholstered furniture. Numerous scientific papers in the peer-reviewed literature have documented the harms posed by the use of these chemicals in consumer products. Our children are especially at risk because they tend to come into greater contact with toxic chemicals found in household dust. And studies show that children whose developing brains up to 5 years old and reproductive organs are most vulnerable. They can have 3 to 5 times higher blood levels of these chemicals than their parents. Infants and toddlers in Alaska are very active as they explore their environments, and they tend to spend more time indoors in homes with greater insulation and less ventilation during the long winter months. This makes them more vulnerable to these levels of toxic flame retardants in these consumer products. The council urges our legislators to support the passage of HB 27 because it will enrich and protect brain development, which help Alaskans' children to flourish in safe indoor environments. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Do we have any questions for the testifier? Okay. Thank you. We really appreciate you calling in today. Next, we're going to go to Andrew Hackman from the Juvenile Product Manufacturing Association in North Carolina. Mr. Hackman, could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Yes, Madam Chair. Andrew Hackman on behalf of the Juvenile Product Manufacturers Association, and appreciate the opportunity to testify before the House Resources Committee this afternoon. We do represent over 85% of the makers of juvenile products, everything from car seats to cribs to strollers, other types of products that JPMA represents. We are regulated by 4 different statutes with regard to the materials and the chemicals that go into our products, everything from the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act, the Federal Hazardous Substances Act, and as referenced in the Chair's testimony a week or so ago, the Toxic Substances Control Act. We have worked with a number of states in trying to reduce requirements for flame retardants. We worked with the state of California in revising their flame retardant requirements under TB 117 so that we don't have to continue to use flame retardants to reach the mandates of those standards. However, there are certain instances where flame retardants are either required in order to meet certain UL performance standards for electronic components, and under NHTSA's standard for car seats, we have to potentially use flame retardants to meet that standard very specifically. We do have concerns that if this legislation moves forward and does not acknowledge those instances where those types of requirements are placed upon the components and the products themselves, we could have the potential for car seats being banned or restricted in the state. I want to just mention in terms of issues in terms of consistency with other states. Other states that have moved forward in this area have acknowledged things like electronic components and car seats, and even San Francisco, which took action on flame retardants this past year, did acknowledge those types of products and those types of situations. So we would hope that the committee would look to move towards some consistency on this legislation. We do have some concerns as well with the breadth and the additional listing of an open-ended process to continue to restrict chemicals. Other states have used weight of evidence standards for similar types of processes and programs, but we look forward to continuing to be involved with the committee and look forward to opportunities to try to make sure that this legislation is consistent with other states, and appreciate the time to testify this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Hackman. If you have any suggested language that you want to send along for our consideration, I'd appreciate that. We did have testimony at the first hearing from the Toy Manufacturers Association, and they mentioned the same issue you just brought up with the electronics and sent some language along. So if you want committee members to see that and you want to send it along, please do so, and we'll make sure everybody has that, okay?
We will do that.
Any questions for Mr. Hackman? Okay, thank you, sir. Next, we're going to go to Dr. Thomas Zoller. He's a professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. If Dr. Zoller, could you please put yourself on the record and your affiliation and provide your testimony?
Yes, my name is Thomas Zeller. I'm a professor in the biology department at the University of Massachusetts. I appreciate the opportunity to speak here today. My research over the past 25 years has really been focused on understanding how thyroid hormone controls brain development and whether and how environmental chemicals like halogenated and other chemical flame retardants can interfere with this action. Now, it's first important to recognize that thyroid hormone is essential for brain development in the fetus, in newborns, and in children, and this fact is so well recognized that every baby born in this country is tested for normal functioning of the thyroid gland at birth. In some regions of the country, as many as 1 in 1,200 newborns have low thyroid hormone, and this is really considered a medical emergency to ensure that they're identified and treated quickly to limit cognitive deficits caused by low thyroid hormone during development. It's also become clear that thyroid hormone levels in pregnant women are particularly important because the thyroid gland in a fetus doesn't begin to function until about 20 weeks. Having said that, thyroid hormone is still important for brain development during that period. Now, my research on flame retardants such as polybrominated diphenyl ethers, tetrabromyl bisphenol A, and some perfluorinated chemicals has demonstrated that these chemicals can interfere with thyroid hormone in the developing brain, but in ways that we don't fully understand. And in particular, these chemicals can interfere with thyroid hormone action in the brain without affecting hormone levels in the blood. Currently, the only tool we have to test whether flame retardants affect the human thyroid system is to measure blood levels of thyroid hormone. But since chemicals can interfere with thyroid hormone action without affecting hormone levels in the blood, it produces a situation where the so-called weight of evidence winds up being obfuscated because of this disconnect between the ability of chemicals to work in tissue without affecting measures that we normally use as an index of safety. And this observation should be concerning because it means that these kinds of chemicals can act like a stealth bomber that fly below the radar of the ways we can test for safety of these chemicals and therefore protect human health. So in closing, it's clear to me that these kind of flame retardants can and do affect human development in part by interfering with thyroid hormone. And this conclusion is based on years of really high-resolution research that can't be duplicated for every flame retardant that comes on the market. These chemicals are robbing our children and grandchildren of critical intellectual potentials. And while they may not, these effects may not be visible on the faces of our children, they're no less important for them individually and for our society. I thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, I think I mispronounced your name. Dr. Zeller?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Apologies for mispronouncing it originally. Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Zeller. Any questions for our testifier? Okay, seeing none, and I'll just make the same request of you, Dr. Zeller, if some of the materials that you quoted from, if there's something you think would be helpful for committee members and want to send it along, we will make sure to distribute that.
I'll be happy to do that.
Okay, that would be helpful. Thank you. And if you have written testimony, we always accept that as well. So sometimes it's when it's very dense testimony, hard to follow along and be taking notes and getting it all at the same time. Next,
I'll do that.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Robert Simon with the American Chemistry Council.
Yes. Good.
Mr. Simon?
Yes.
Hi there. If you could please state your name and affiliation for the record and provide us with your testimony.
All right. Thank you. Chair Starr, Jessen, and members of the House Resource Committee, my name is Robert Simon, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the American Chemistry Council and its North American Flame Retardant Alliance. Regret that I couldn't be there in person, but greatly appreciate the opportunity to participate remotely. I did have the opportunity to listen in to all the hearing from last week regarding HB 27. I've tried to factor in some of that discussion into my remarks today. I just want to start with our industry is committed to the strong chemical safety regulation. This includes support for the overwhelmingly bipartisan legislation that was enacted in 2016 at the federal level, the new Lautenberg Chemical Safety Act. That legislation was signed into law by President Obama and fundamentally strengthens and changes the federal regulation of chemical safety. And I mention that because it's directly relevant for this bill and some of the issues that were raised regarding the legislation, as well as some of the valid historical issues that I think Chair Tarr had raised last week at the hearing. We are respectively speaking in opposition to House Bill 27. My testimony will emphasize three key points. One, the legislation would duplicate federal and international chemical regulatory initiatives, including those in the U.S. that have recently been adopted that fundamentally strengthen chemical regulation. There are numerous federal and international regulatory agencies already assessing the safety of chemicals, including the explicit consideration of children's health. So we think this is important to take into account, and Alaska should take that into consideration as they think about some of this legislation. The second issue is that the legislation would impose overly broad bans on the use of certain chemicals in all consumer products and could undermine overall consumer product safety. Under the current legislation, and not specific to flame retardants, if the state identifies a chemical of potential concern to children's health, it would automatically be banned in all consumer products. From our perspective, this is inappropriate and not supported by the science. There may be cases where a chemical in a specific application is not even available or does not result in any exposure to consumers or children, and yet this legislation would automatically ban all of its uses in consumer products. Furthermore, banning certain chemicals could have unintended consequences of creating other consumer safety risks. Number of chemicals are used in products, chemistry are used to provide a broad range of product benefits, and by broadly banning all the consumer product applications, Alaska could be undermining overall consumer product safety. And again, we think that's important to consider as Alaska reflects on this legislation. And third and lastly, the bill includes, from our perspective, an inappropriate ban on a broad range of flame retardants and would ban specifically substances that government regulators around the globe have determined do not present a risk. And just as one example of that, one of the flame retardants specifically called out in the bill, TCPT, is a very different safety profile from the criteria referenced in the bill. And despite the fact that it's been reviewed and have safety determination for its uses in both Canada and the European Union, this bill would ban that flame retardant. That's just one example of why we think this is overly broad. So happy to answer any questions and look forward to providing additional information to the committee as we consider this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simon. We really appreciate your testimony today. And again, if you have anything you would like to send along to committee members, please send it our way and we will make sure to distribute it. Any questions for the testifier? Okay. Thank you for your testimony today. I do want to recognize, and I apologize, Representative Johnson, because Representative Josephson started the meeting, and so he's who put everybody's name on the record. So Representative Johnson did join the meeting about 2:10, so apologies for not getting that in there sooner. Next, we're going to go to Susan Walsh from the Alaska Nurses Association. Ms. Walsh, if you could please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Susan Walsh. I am currently the local bargaining unit president and past president of the Florida Alaska Nurses Association.
And please go ahead with your testimony.
Yes. I'd like to thank the opportunity to speak for support of Health Bill 27. And it's an act aimed at protecting Alaska children and firefighters from high-risk exposure to organohalogen flame retardants. I am a registered nurse with a diverse background that includes family practice, pediatrics, emergency room, and chemo infusion. Currently, I'm employed as a labor and delivery nurse and in-house lactation consultant. Providing care to children and families is my passion. I hope by now that you have had the opportunity to review the excellent fact sheet provided by ACAP. And you've also heard testimony from experts regarding this toxic chemical. I'd like to reinforce the shocking statistics cited that birth defects in Alaska are twice as high than the United States as a whole, and Native infants have twice the birth defects as white infants in Alaska. Currently, there are no federal laws that protect people from the unnecessary addition of flame retardant products. Even though this past September, the Federal Consumer Product Safety Commission released a long list of adverse health effects of these noxious chemicals, which have a disproportionately negative effect on vulnerable populations, which include children. The Alaska Nurses Association has long supported the precautionary principle, enjoying national affiliates in support of passage of similar bills at the federal level. However, that process is moving at a snail's pace. I urge you to protect Alaskans and pass House Bill 27 out of committee and join the other 15 states that are considering policies to ban toxic flame retardants. The fact that this bill is in the Resource Committee might be confusing for some. However, I would contend that our children are our biggest resource and that needs and deserves protection. Thank you for your time and consideration in this matter.
Thank you, Ms. Walsh. Really appreciate your testimony. Any questions for our testifier? Okay, thank you so much. And next we're going to go to Samaries in Anchorage.
Hi. Can you hear me?
A little bit louder, please, if you'd state your name and affiliation for the record. And I'm pretty sure I mispronounced your first name, and I'm sorry. I was trying to remember how to say it properly.
My name is, and thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony in support of HB 27. My name is Samaris Seguinot Medina. I am a scientist and public health professional, but primarily I'm a mother and grandmother. And I thought it would be relevant and important for this hearing to remember something that I think haven't been mentioned. I think there's a lot of evidence showing the harmful, the bad health effects that flame retardants have in children. But I wanted to remember this as part of this process that's been going on for a while. Maybe you might remember former Dr. David Hainback. He provided testimony to the Alaska legislature several years ago. Former Dr. Hainback failed to disclose his ties to flame retardant chemical industry. He testified at least three times in Juneau between 2010 and 2012 against bills to restrict chemicals proven to be hazardous, especially to children. The Washington Medical Board reported that Hainback invented tragic stories of children burn victims in his testimony to Alaska and other states. Hainback fabricated testimony and falsely presented himself as an unbiased burn expert when in fact he was on payroll of the manufacturers of chemical flame retardants. Washington state officials said that he had been paid at that time $240,000 for his help. So I just wanted to make the point that chemical industry is paying people to give false testimony. And this is an example of the deceptive tactics that the chemical industry uses for their own benefit without any consideration of the harm they can cause to people, especially children who are the most vulnerable. It's our duty and responsibility as citizens and public servants to care for our children and provide ethically and respectfully the protection they need so they can thrive and grow in a safe and healthy environment. I support HB 27, and I want to thank very much Representative Starr and Representative Josephson for working for the well-being of Alaskan children. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Really appreciate it. And if you would please share that information, again, we'll make sure to provide that to committee members. I don't think that issue had come up yet this session in this conversation. And could you just say one more time, there was a documentary that exposed that, if I'm remembering correctly, and what was the name of it?
Yeah, I can provide that in my testimony. I don't have it right here.
Okay, that would be great, because that way folks, if they wanted to independently seek more information, they'd have that. So if you would please send that along, we'll share that with everyone. Any questions for our testifier? No? Okay. That completes all of the testimony I have here for folks signed up. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on House Bill 27? Okay. Seeing no one, then we're going to go ahead and close public testimony. We're going to hold this bill over until Friday. Amendments are going to be due at 10 a.m. on Thursday morning. Okay? So, brief at ease. You were listening in. We got disconnected. It's 2:41. I was just announcing that we've closed public testimony on House Bill 27, and amendments are due at 10 a.m. on Thursday. Representative Johnson had a comment, and then we're going to try to quickly go to 272 because we wanted to try and work on that today before it's over. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, can you explain to me, because I'm not entirely clear. So can you still buy this material, something online? It still can be, because it's not going to make much difference if we can buy it from something from Amazon. A lot of people order clothes. I guess I was just wondering if you could explain that to me a little bit.
Sure. And I just quickly, since we don't really have it for discussion today, but the idea is that, you're not able to quickly get all of the manufactured goods off the shelves or anything like that. But what we would be doing is sort of drawing a line in the sand so that any new products that were sold would be the ones without these chemicals in them. So, of course, there will be some. And, so long as people own them, they'll live out their natural lives, and then people will dispose of them however they would normally dispose of things, hopefully safely. But then after the effective date, then for products that would be sold in the state, they would be products that don't have these chemicals in them.
Does that include online orders? That's all I was wondering.
I need to double check on the online portion of it, but it for sale in the state, I think would include that. So I think it would be restricted because it'd be all the products that would be sold. But I will just double check that so I can give you absolute certainty. Representative Rauscher.
I guess I just want to ask a quick question, and you can email the answer. I don't care. Mm-hmm. But bullet number 4 in your sectional analysis, mm-hmm. and then bullet number 6. I was just wondering, how does number 6 exist if you have bullet number 4?
Because it's that same point, Representative Rauscher, where there will be products already here in the state that will contain these chemicals. And so for the products that are already here, then, that would be a labeling provision for that. But then after the effective date of the bill, when you were no longer going to sell the products, so there'd be sort of two sets of products. The ones that were already, in the possession of retailers in the state, and we're not saying, you have to go in and take all of those off the shelves and throw them away. We're not saying anything like that. So for those products, there would be this informed consumer kind of option, right? So you would have information about that product before purchasing it. And then after the effective date, then the other products that came in would comply with the law and wouldn't contain those chemicals.
And just one... Mm-hmm. And then I'll leave you alone. It says manufacturers. Mm-hmm. So whatever's on the shelf is what you were talking about just now. But if this is actually speaks to manufacturers. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm trying to get the difference. Once they're on the shelf, is the store owner required to put the label on now? Or I guess I'm trying to figure, I'm trying to follow what you're saying here.
So for the products already in possession of retailers, it would be a retailer responsibility to put that public notice. But then, the reason the other part of it speaks to the manufacturers is then we're telling the manufacturers that those products can't be sold in the state anymore. So that goes specifically to them. Does that make sense? And maybe we could look at it after committee?
Yeah, we'll look at that later. I just wanted to bring that in case anybody else wanted to look at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and I don't mean to cut it off, except that I know Representative Josephson wants to get back to his bill. And so in our last bit of time here, thank you.
Okay, so we're now going to the last item today, House Bill 272, the Tangle Lakes Game Refuge. before we consider any amendments, and there were two that were timely delivered that we're going to take up, do members have any questions about the bill? Okay, I don't see any. I will, Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to, I'm not sure from where the exhibit arrived, just on my desk here, but anyway, it does show the proposed refuge area as being just about bisected, if I read this correctly, by Doyon lands and or boundaries and Otna boundaries. So that is helpful, and I appreciate it. I also noticed in this other exhibit, as far as the land, it does include a portion of the Matsu borough. Was any effort made in the interim to reach out to the Matsu borough in any way, shape, or form as a local government entity that?
No, I see that. I believe one of their lobbyists is here.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
I was more information as it relates to the two new pieces or two maps exhibits that showed up today.
Right. I would note that the area that is in the Matsu is presently in a controlled use area already. So it is a regulated area at the present time.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you said it's already on controlled use, so it says wildlife, habitat, public recreation, and forestry. Is that what you're talking about? I mean, Susit area plan, is that what you're talking about?
I'm trying to remember the name of the controlled use area in the western portion. And actually, I will ask Mr. Meehan, who's online. Mr. Meehan.
My question would
yes.
be if.
Yes, this is Joe Meehan.
Is what that? What does that land use plan or controlled use? What does that? What? How is that different from what we're talking about doing here today?
Sure, I think Mr. Meehan will be outstanding to answer that. What this map shows, and for the record, this map is a multicolored map, 8.5 by 14. It looks like maybe even 11 by 14. That shows principally, well, it's called Proposed Tangle Lakes, State Game Refuge, Generalized State Ownership, Leasehold Location Orders, Mineral Orders, Parens, Closing, and Land Classifications. And so it generally shows land classifications as derived from two and possibly three management areas. But Mr. Meehan, if you could, the area that is just to the east of the McLaren River and inside the Matsu borough is in a controlled use area. Am I right about that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Joe Meehan with Wildlife Division, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Yes, that area is part of the Clearwater Creek controlled use area, which is an administrative designation by the Board of Game. And that controlled use area primarily restricts the use of off-road vehicles while engaged in hunting activities.
And let me follow up with that. Mr. Meehan, the off-road preclusion is nothing that the proposed refuge creates. It's something that the Board of Game has already created. Is that right?
Mr. Co-Chair, yes, it is correct. That's created by the Board of Game.
Okay. And for the committee's information, we also have Steve Masterman and Marty Parsons online. Any other questions? So at this time, as I noted, we had two timely amendments, and Representative Birch, would you like to offer your first amendment?
Sure. Amendment number one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number one is actually
designated for purposes of discussion.
Absolutely. It's on the top right. It's designated 30-LS1167/U.1, and it's basically changing on page 7, line 22, deleting 2019 and inserting 2023. And I move that amendment. Because it, basically House Bill 272 withdraws mineral entry, meaning no new mining claims can be staked. This amendment extends mineral withdrawal from 2019 to 2023 to allow a five-year window for staking claims. This extension would permit additional time for the mining industry to do geologic evaluations and determine mineral potential in the area and stake claims if there's interest. These claims would then be honored under the language of page 7, line 21, regarding existing valid rights. This is a common mineral withdrawals and includes those in ANILCA.
Representative Birch, thank you. Except I just want to clarify for our record keepers, is the amendment actually marked U.2?
The one that I've got in front of me here, U.2, correct.
Okay. So we have U.2, also called amendment number 1, before us. It's been offered, objected to. Is there any discussion about amendment number 1? Okay, I don't see any. Is the objection maintained?
Mr. Co-Chair, do you want to speak to this amendment? I guess I as
sure.
The sponsor of the bill, I...
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Well, Representative Birch, in fairness, I looked at this, and at first blush, I didn't, you may not think this is much of a compliment, but I didn't reject it outright. I don't know whether its impact would be to drive this issue to a conclusion, and the issue I'm speaking of is whether ultimately the department, through the permitting process, would permit mining or what the result would be. But ultimately I am going to oppose it. But I didn't find it I found it had some merit. I just don't agree to it personally as one representative. Any other comments? Okay. There was an objection. And I'll let you close. We didn't, other than my comments, there wasn't much to close to, but you're welcome to make any other remarks you want.
I would just say that I think this, this bill in total is just a land grab. I'm opposed to it from day one. I think that this mitigates to some extent the land grab aspects from the standpoint if there's any potential there, mineral potential, at least it kicks that can down the road and allows a few more years for exploration development. And I think it's just any time we start locking up Alaska lands and resources, we have a tremendous record of joint use and shared use lands in this state where people can get along and get by. And the mining industry in particular has a sterling record statewide of doing good work in resource extraction and permitting, mineral development and resource development and hunting and fishing and everything else all at the same time. It's been my personal experience that that's the case. I think this just, it does mitigate the adverse impacts of this bill. Thank you, sir.
Okay. All right, thank you. So at this point, I guess I would invite Ms. Tillinghast to take the roll on Amendment Number 1, U.2.
Representative Birch?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Representative Rauscher?
Yes.
Representative Tallarico?
Yes.
Representative Lincoln?
No.
Representative Drummond?
No.
No.
Representative Tarr?
No.
Representative
Josephson? No. So Amendment Number 1, U.2, does not pass and is not adopted by a vote of 4-5. So now we'll go to the next amendment. Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is amendment number 2 for purposes of our afternoon here, but on the actual amendment, the designation in the top right corner is 30-LS1167/U.3.
Okay, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. Representative Birch.
Thank you. This amendment proposes to remove the mineral withdrawal sections lines 21 through 24 on page 7 and replace this section with language allowing for mineral entry into the Tangle Lakes State Game Refuge if the Commissioner of DNR determines that exploration or development is compatible with the purposes specified in Section B. As we have heard through the invited public testimony, the premise that we must make a choice between renewable and non-renewable resources is simply not true. We do not have to make a choice between job and wealth creation and public use and habitat. My father was a mining engineer. My mom was a geologist. I grew up in mining camps in Alaska around Fairbanks and in the Brooks Range. I personally felt the positive impact and value that sustainable development has had in Alaska, and I believe we all have. To say that mining will irreparably damage both the ecosystem and the wildlife in this area is unacceptable to me. It is not based on facts, environmental assessments, or historical context. Removing the mineral withdrawal section and replacing it with this language will ensure that we can continue to maintain public use and habitat, which we all value and enjoy, while also allowing for responsible development, which we depend on for jobs and state revenue. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, and we've been joined by Mr. Bruce Dale of the Department of Fish and Game for questions. Although we're sort of beyond that, but we could entertain those if we need to. Other comments? Yes, Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I support this amendment. Several of the public comments that I received, definitely a fair portion of them, had a focus, and several people I talked to individually had a focus on the portage ability between the Tangle Lakes and canoeing area and some other things from lower Tangle Lake all the way up to the highway and then into the rest of the Tangle Lakes on the south side of the Denali. And it's always been my understanding, and I've certainly been over in that area and participated in that area, that that's already been designated wild and scenic river, and I think is already a set aside. You know, we talk about some things that are set aside already, and that area, of course, has been that way for quite some time. I can't remember specifically when that was set aside, but it seems there was some confusion on some folks, or quite a bit of that area, that the Tangle Lakes was part of an area, in particularly for those people that want to enjoy that near the lake, that it was at some kind of risk, and I actually believe that's been protected for quite some time. So I would agree with the sponsor of the amendment. It seems to be that at least quite a few folks say that those two things can't coexist, and I guess I'll have to rely on my personal experience as well from working in a particular industry where after they had completed, they'd actually improved the habitat substantially in the area where they had done mining, and really had kind of changed from an area that was pretty sparse with the wildlife population now that it's kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say it's booming, but it certainly doesn't have any issues because of that work. Now, that there's no question about it. It takes responsible people to do that and responsible regulations, which I think we do have. So there was at least a part of that when people were concerned about the portage between the lakes and their ability to enjoy that particular part. I do believe that's in a protected area and has been protected for a while. So I do support this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. And the area I think Representative Tallarico is speaking of is the easement corridor, this recreational river corridor.
Correct.
That's shown on the map previously identified. Any other comments about amendment number two? We've heard from amendment number two. I'll just say that while I appreciate Representative Birch's amendment, and it does allow some discretion with the commissioner, and he or she would have to find facts that support that mineral development is consistent with the refuge. Personally, this is just me speaking, think of it as the previous amendment. It doesn't I've seen amendments that bother me more but I still don't personally support the amendment. Any other comments? Seeing none, there's an objection that has been maintained, and so Ms. Tillinghast, will you call the roll?
Representative Parrish?
Yes.
Representative Bush?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Rasher?
Yes.
Representative Talley?
Yes.
Representative Lincoln?
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
No.
Yes.
Representative Josephson? No. Okay, so the amendment number 2, marked U.3, passes and is adopted by a vote of 7 yea and 2 nay. And that brings us to the bill before us as amended. Is there discussion of it as amended? Representative Rauscher.
Yes. These maps are very interesting. I haven't seen them until today. They have a lot of information on them. One of the things I wonder is what exactly is the special use area that the state has there? What are the restrictions there already exist? It's marked out. It's a fairly large portion of this entire area, and I just wonder what is that, and what are the confines of that?
And we have a question. We have experts on the line. I think what we're going to find is that Alaskans and visitors can't remove rocks from the area because that's the archaeological district. But I think I'll go to any of the gentlemen, there are four, who might want to answer that. So the question is, what is the special use area do? And it might be that Mr. Masterman wants to answer that.
Mr. Chairman, this is Marty Parsons, Deputy Director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water.
Okay.
I can take a shot at answering that. The special use area, primarily, it just limits the type and when certain types of motorized vehicles can operate within the archaeological area. That's the primary function of the special use area.
Okay. Follow up. Could I understand the mineral order closing in the green area? Is there someone online that can speak to that?
Yes, and I think we'll go back to Mr. Parsons. The mineral closing order, Mr. Parsons.
Yes. The question is, does it exist? Or I'm sorry, maybe a little more clarification, Mr. Chair, of what the question is about the mineral closing order.
Sure. So, first of all, I hope you have the privilege of looking at the map we have from your department. But essentially, there's a mineral closing order, and it appears the area that Representative Rauscher is discussing is on the far east and also north of the proposed refuge.
That is correct. There is a mineral closing order in that area. It's mineral order 1118 and 483.
And I mean, we could guess as to what it does, but what is its impact?
It closes the area to any staking or creation of mineral property rights that don't pre-exist the closure order being put into effect. In essence, it closes the area to staking and mineral location.
Thank you. Any other questions?
And just one more follow-up.
Yes, follow-up.
Just so I get a complete understanding of this map. Leasehold location order. That's a fairly large area also. I just want to understand what that means.
Mr. Parsons, again, there's a question about the leasehold location order, which I can see is mostly overlaid with the archaeological district.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, the leasehold location order basically means that an individual can only develop those minerals through a a lease. They cannot stake a claim and develop a property right.
They
can stake a claim, but they can't mine without entering into a lease with the state.
Okay.
So it adds a few more protections to the area where, in a lease, we would be able to put in a few more stipulations than we might otherwise be able to in a regular operating plan.
Through the chair?
Yes.
So you can stake a claim, but you can't mine. Does that mean you can't turn the rocks over to find out why you're staking a claim there? Or what can't you do and what can you do when you're staking a claim but not mining?
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, you can explore under a leasehold location order. The leasehold location order only requires that another step be taken to enter into a lease agreement with the state to actually operate and mine. It does not prevent mining.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about the map. I see in the upper left corner within the game refuge area, it states it's part of the Eastern Tanana Area Plan. And over to the right, within that mineral closure area, it says Tanana Basin Area Plan. Mm-hmm. I had kind of thought, and I'm probably wrong, I thought all of this was included when they split the Tanana Basin Area Plan. I thought all of this was Eastern Tanana Area Plan. Am I mistaken? It seems like to me that the Eastern Tanana Area Plan would be over on the east side of this map. I'm just not sure. If we were to look at those area plans, would we find the western portion of this in the Eastern Tanana Area Plan and the eastern portion of this in the Tanana Basin Area Plan? Or is it all Eastern Tanana Basin?
Mr. Chair, was that to me? Marty Parsons, Deputy Director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water?
I think so, Mr. Parsons. You're doing so well that we keep coming back to you.
Thank you so much. To try to clarify, there are actually four active operating plans that this area is subject to. At the time when the Tanana Basin Area Plan was broken into multiple parts, you've got the Susitna Area Plan, the Eastern Tanana Area Plan, and the remnant Tanana Basin Area Plan that affects portions of this, plus the Copper Basin Area Plan. So the map is identified correctly that there is the remnant of the older Tanana Basin Area Plan, and the Eastern Tanana Area Plan only modified a portion of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Representative Rauscher.
Just a real question for the maker, through the chair, the maker of the bill. Do we have a designated definition of state game refuge for the state of Alaska?
Sure. I would tell you that this is an issue that I've looked at, and it is hard, but not – I'm going to refer to Mr. Meehan just to speed it up. Mr. Meehan, is there a specific definition of a state refuge?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, could you please repeat the question?
Is there a specific statutory definition of a state game refuge?
Mr. Co-Chair, there is a statutory purpose statement for refuges. It's short. I can read it if you'd like.
Yes, please.
Okay, and this is in Title 16. It says the purpose of AS 1620... 0.010 through 1620.080, which contains the enabling legislation for refuge areas, says the purpose is to protect and preserve the natural habitat and game populations in certain designated areas of the state.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, with that, Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move that we pass House Bill 272, that's 30, /LS1167/U, out of committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Objection.
Okay, we have an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection?
I think we've spoken enough.
Okay. All right. Ms. Tillinghast, I think we're ready for the roll.
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Representative Parrish.
Yes.
Representative Burke.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Rauscher.
No.
Representative Talarico.
No.
Representative Lincoln.
Yes.
Representative Carr.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes. So with that, the bill moves from committee by a vote of 5-4. Bill will be forwarded, and we will sign, and it's being signed now, the recommendations booklet. And the committee, I appreciate you staying over. The committee will meet on Wednesday, as we typically do, barring our being on the floor. And at that time, we will take up HCR 23, Protect Wildlife from Foreign Pathogens, HB 15, Confidentiality of Animals and Crop Records, and HB 354, Dive Fishery Assessments. The staff will send out a notice on deadlines for amendments on those matters. Representative Birch.
There's been some discussion on the governor's oil tax credit bill. Is that in the queue or scheduled or planned to be scheduled, or where is that at in the mix?
It's well in the queue, but I'm going to invite Representative Tarr to speak to that if she would like to.
You asked before, and we told you, you know, it'll be scheduled at some point. So we need to wrap up, though.
All right. We're going to adjourn at 3:15.